thanks so much for listening. So much to talk about. We're going to get through a lot. Let's start with beer here in Utah. 3.2. What is going to happen?
Well, you want to set it up, Greg?
Yeah. So a lot of states had different context, alcohol content in their beer.
Utah, we have very watered down beer.
Yeah, it's a 3.2. It's by weight. A lot of states even do it by volume. So you have these different numbers flying around. But the 3.2 beer that Oklahoma was the last state that said, you know what, we're not 3.2 anymore. We're going to go to the more nationalized standard, which is what? It's a 4.8. And so as states do not have, as many states have 3.2, then that means your major breweries like Coors.
No one's making it.
Yeah, they're not going to make it just for one lone state. So the fear is that Utah would not see some of the major breweries like Budweiser or Coors or those be in these areas. And so supermarkets, convenience stores, they're worried about that. And so there's a bill looking to go to that more national average. But that doesn't mean that everyone will be at this ceiling of content of alcohol, because beers have different, amounts.
It's true.
Near beer is what we're talking about in Utah. It's 3.2. It's been that way a long time. And the state would just as soon in the legislature do away with beer if they had their way, but they're torn because they got this other side of all these retail lobbyists and these convenience store lobbyists. And what's going to happen if the legislature doesn't act? Nobody's producing the 3.2 anymore. So they are forced in this corner to actually do something. And I suspect that they're going to go, morality, what should we do? Money, on the other hand, we better go with the money. And they're going to figure this out. So we'll probably have not only beer available, but it's going to be like real beer instead of the near beer.
You strike me as too hoity-toity for beer. Do you drink beer?
I hate wine. I went to BYU. They all taste the same to me. So I'm very embarrassing with people because, a $50 glass of wine tastes the same as a $3 glass of wine. It's lost on me.
Heidi, here's
good.
The deal.
Okay.
So look, I'm from Pittsburgh. That's a drinking town with a football problem.
Yes, it is.
So you know.
With a football problem.
No, look, this is the reality about it. There's a lot of local breweries that would probably love for it to stay at 3.2 and see some of their major competitors in these large big beer, big pharma, big beer, not be able to be in the state. So there might be some smaller breweries that homegrown that would love.
So Polygamous Porter would be huge here in Utah.
If they stayed at 3.2 and all the big breweries didn't want to come here, I think some smaller ones might like that. But
I
think that the narrative isn't about the morality part. It's things like that, about the economy, about what is being made, what's available to consumers. And I just think that they're having that policy discussion in this session. I think it's with some of these states that have fallen out and aren't doing the 3.2 any longer, I think you'll see a change.
Bottom line, we'll join suit? Yes.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I think Utah will follow suit.
They're gonna straighten this out. There's too much money on the line.
Okay, also the legislature working right now to get $4 million ready because there's some issues with getting medical marijuana on the market, whether it's banking or the farms ready. Is that $4 million okay at this point?
Look, let me tell you what these people did. They found the worst of all solutions. There's a very simple solution. They avoided that to get more government. They just couldn't get enough. We set up in that, instead of saying, you know what, there's a distribution system out there right now. We don't even care how people get the marijuana. We just will say anybody with a medical certificate, they have the right to have marijuana and they won't be persecuted. It would have been five lines, but no. Thousands of pages of rules, hundreds of new bureaucrats, millions of dollars to make a DABC-like monster structure in the state.
Our rule's
we
not
got
needed,
bureaucrats.
Though. Rules.
What? We got a rule. If you have a medical pass and you fit under the qualifications and a doctor signs this, you have the right to have this amount, a medical amount of cannabis. You want to go to Colorado? You go to Colorado. You want to go, how you get it is your business. But what we have, we're going to have state farms. We're going to have growing. We're going to have inspectors everywhere. We're going to set up special retail shops. We're going to have this system that's going to cost millions of dollars because it's all in cash. You can't imagine the bureaucracy that the Republicans in this state are overwhelming. This $4 million is just
we
the beginning. It's going
to
be dozens, hundreds of millions of dollars by the time their bureaucracy gets done.
Okay, so will this $4 million work, Greg? Can we do
this?
This
is a test of patience. I'm going
to
get a badge for listening to that. I'm telling you right now. If we're calling it medicine.
Okay.
I would hope that we all agree that there is a regulatory climate that is associated with medicine and how we receive medicine. We want this to be a system. We went and looked and said, look, we want access for patients. But we had critics of medical cannabis. Unregulated medical cannabis was never going to address some of the issues of public safety and some of the issues that the patient's health. And when you say they're entitled, Jim, to a certain amount, who measures that? Who makes sure that the dosages are there if it is in fact medicine? So what we're doing is we had a very collaborative. We had those that had concerns, the physicians, and we had law enforcement, and we had faith-based leaders that had concerns about medical cannabis, whether it had efficacy or not. We had the proponents, those that wrote the proposition, authored it, gathered the signatures, raised the money for the campaign, who came together and said, look, let's make sure we don't hurt access by over-regulating it so that patients in need have care, but let's address the public safety issues as well. It's a blend. Other states, Pennsylvania, they license doctors. They have an active role. They also have licensed pharmacists that are there at the specialized cannabis pharmacies in places like Pennsylvania and Connecticut as well. We took some of the best practices of those states and in collaboration with and cooperation with those who were strong proponents of medical cannabis. In fact, as former Senator Mark Madsen came back, he doesn't live in Utah anymore, flew back on this announcement of this agreement and said, look, if I could have got this bill passed when I was sponsoring it, I would have taken this bill. This is a good bill. So we did that. You know, if you want unregulated access to cannabis, period, if that's all you want, then you do hate the agreement. But if we want people, even people that maybe have not considered medical cannabis as a way to treat ailments or to receive, you know, care, the more you make it a legitimate doctor relationship with the patient, with the pharmacist, the stronger that is, the more I think people that might not have considered medical cannabis before may see that as an option.
So bottom line, Jim's not a big fan of rules because we saw your video. You went down to Las Vegas. You even broke their own laws down there and you ate your medical gummy outside and you have to eat it inside. Did you
perfectly
feel wild?
Perfectly fine.
Okay.
Look, just one more thing because we don't want to get
down a
rabbit hole. The people who are supposed to be the guardians of
the
less
galaxy.
Government, the nanny state took over. The state employees are going to be drug dealers. You couldn't think of a worse thing. Guess what, my good friend Greg? There is a perfectly good distribution system for marijuana. It's there now. It was there before the law. It was there after the law. It's not going to change that. All we're going to do. All we're going to do.
Drug dealers?
Now we turn all state employees or the state employees that are doing this. We're the only state that it has the state out there dealing in and selling the drugs. This is a catastrophe, and it's paternalistic to the people of the state.
Awesome to have on your business card, though. Right?
Yeah, listen, there's privately owned specialized medical cannabis pharmacies that people can, and they're privately owned, and you can go to a walk-up shop. If you live in a rural place, population doesn't call for a shop like this. The state has created a central fill model. That you could call and with the recommendation from your physician and have that filled where that recommended amount could be delivered to a close a county department of health.
All right.
You know what? Again, I say that we're creating better access for patients, and you can't say on one hand, medical cannabis is not illegal and patients should have access, and as soon as we try to find a way to make sure that patients have access, call everybody a drug dealer. You can't have it both ways.
No, you can't.
I'm going to zip it.
Okay, good. We've got other issue to deal with. On the November ballot, Utah voters made some decisions that they really didn't want the legislature to mess with at all. One of them was medical marijuana. Another one was Medicaid. And then redistricting. And now we're hearing that Bramble wants to ditch redistricting. Forget about it. Is that an okay thing to do? People obviously voted for this. They want some fairness in the state. They want representation.
We have this nanny bunch in the legislature, and you hear them. They try not to let it come out, but it comes out. You know, the people don't really know. The people ultimately aren't smart enough. We got to figure it out. You know, on medical marijuana, on Medicaid expansion, we can shove it down their throat because we know better than the people. And Bramble And the Utah County Brigade, they're getting all set to now do the same thing on independent redistricting. You know what? The people are smart. In a lot of ways, look at Medicaid expansion. They're a hell of a lot smarter than the people up there that their political ideas are inbred. They just all talk to each other and they come out, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm saying it's a serious problem. Doing away with independent redistricting, added on to all the other things where the legislature is crushing the voice of the people, is a bad, bad thing.
Okay, redistricting sounds like an easy issue, though, but a lot of people, if you had to sit down and actually draw it up in a map and make sure it were all equal, it's not easy to do. Can it be done independently? Can it be fair and actually happen?
So if you were to count by counties, an overwhelming number of counties voters rejected this independent commission because people do not have blank and or without opinion.
This
everybody idea that everybody's going to come in there and they just have no opinion on any side and they're independent, it may sound nice, but it's not real. And more, like I said, overwhelmingly by county, these, especially rural counties, they don't trust Wasatch Front to decide how everything's going to be drawn, and there's a worry about that. So if you look at how that vote fell out, especially on redistricting and how that representation occurs, it's a deeper issue. I will tell you this, I lived through a redistricting process. The Democrat Party said, we're gonna sue you, so it's a litigation hold. Anything you create by way of paper, you have to drop and you have to keep, so we were dropping every piece of paper, every map you made, you had to have. You know, if you're sitting there trying to make a map for the commission, redistricting commission's consideration, all that has to be saved. We were never sued. You have to follow major boundaries, whether it be the cities, your corridors, your roads, things like that. And it is incredibly difficult to get this right. And so I would say in that redistricting proposition, it says they're going to tell you how to do it. And you just get an up or down vote. You can't say you missed a little here or there's something you haven't considered. It's an up or down vote. It's I don't think it matches with how difficult that process is and how many different maps you have and how you have to bring the people together. Look, at the end of the day, if we do it wrong, there is an election.
Yeah.
There is accountability. In the House, it's every other year, 2-year terms. Senators, it's 4 years. But you have an accountability to the people. And I'm going to tell you that redistricting, I was part of a process that I think was what, you know, they wanted, the Democrats across the country sue when they can. There was no grounds to litigate on our redistricting process because we take those issues into consideration, the ones that we should.
So should it happen? Bottom line, yes or no?
No, I don't think it's necessary. I actually don't think the Constitution calls for it. I think they call for the legislative body to draw these lines. I think they've carefully crafted it to try and make it so that we ultimately make the decision, but they have this take it or leave it map. But I think it, I don't think it's going to do what's been advertised.
We have to redistrict, of course. Every 10 years, we draw the lines again. There's still gonna be 29 senators, and if the state population grows by 500,000, then we have to redistrict that. What the Republicans do, they crawl in a caucus, and they sit in there for 14 hours, and they draw their own lines. And yeah, there's a lot of fight. There's a lot of discussion.
So Democrats aren't drawing lines in their offices?
And well, let me finish what happens. The Republicans draw their own lines and the congressmen are all texting and shoving notes underneath. And there's a battle, all right, but it's a battle between the Republicans. And that's exactly what happens. And when they come out of there, they come out like little robots, like little Tommy Toms, and they go out and they vote like this. And we have districts drawn by the legislators to pick their constituents. And what this independent commission would do is say, it's not right for legislators to draw their own districts. What ought to happen is an independent group of people ought to sit down. The governor has a say, he can veto it. And there's still, and that legislature still has to say yes or no, but they're not sitting there drawing their own districts. It's a heinous way to do it. A lot of states don't. And Greg says, go back to the election. The election's rigged by the way the boundaries have been done. Okay. That's the whole purpose
I'm telling
of
you,
it.
The last drawing, and Jim, you weren't there, so I was there, but
as a state party chair, remember?
Yes, as a state party chair. So we had a lot of Democrats from the state party that were part of the map drawing with their Democrat representatives and senators. I saw them there. They were part of that process. The districts in Salt Lake County, Representative Kaiser, Republican. Representative Christensen, Republican. They merged those districts together. One had to go. Representative Lee Perry, Representative Brad Galvez, two Republicans. But districts were collapsed. One of them had to go. The scenario you're describing would not see Republican seats that are merged together, and one would have to be eliminated.
You're making a face, that, Jim.
But 15 more seconds.
That is what happens when you do it the right way.
Ogden
sometimes the populations
City
shift.
Has about 90,000 people. It should have one senator. It should have three representatives. Because Ogden's issues are unique. They're a big city. They got big city problems. What do the Republicans do? They split Ogden. If they just let the people of Ogden vote, they would have a Democratic senator, probably, and three Democratic representatives. So what do? They split it in such a way that Ogden is split into five different ways, and they can pick up all of the suburban and rural parts. And so the people of Ogden have no representation whatsoever, because their representatives are beholden not to Ogden City and the values of the urban city, but to the suburban areas that make up the majority. That is a bad thing for democracy, and they ought to be ashamed of themselves. And that's what happens when all of those, look, if Democrats were doing it, you don't believe they would be doing the same thing? Look at the states that they are doing it.
I don't know. It probably, if there were more Democrats in our legislature than Republicans, it probably would be the same thing.
Exactly.
The other way. So let's get this figured out. We'll see what they happen. We could talk about redistricting for hours. You guys could probably wrestle.
I have a retort, but I will.
You'll keep it to yourself.
I know.
Okay.
So I won that one then, McGregor.
I don't know about that.
I guess. She's the last word.
Okay, we got to talk about Prop 3 because this is an important one. Medicaid expansion. At this point, what has been passed so far, 50,000 people who would have gotten it, according to what people voted on their ballots, will no longer get it. But there's been some interesting thing happening. Todd Weiler, a Republican who's been around a long time, a surprise vote against it. Why do you think that happened?
A fear. I think there's some fear out there. I think that there's been a lot of attention put towards this. I think misinformation. I think that one of the things when we talk about that 50,000 that would be left off of a plan that you're hearing about in the Capitol Hill right now, I don't think people know that 50,000 are already covered through ACA. So the gap is a 0 to 100% of the federal poverty level. The Medicaid expansion would ask those that are currently being covered through the exchange, which by the way, the insurance is actually better than Medicaid, who are currently covered 100% by the federal government, they want the state to take a portion, so 50,000 of them. So if the voice of the people was about, we have an uncovered population. And to give you an example, we talked about, I think, if I'm a single individual and I make $12,000 a year or less, right now I don't have access to Medicaid. Medicaid's been for children and those that are disabled, but we've, household income, want to cover people that don't have it. We estimate that at 100,000 people that have fallen into that gap of not being covered. If it was the intent that we cover those that are not covered, the legislature absolutely will be honoring the voice of the people and covering them. If it was the portion, the 50,000 that currently have insurance now and coverage now or have access to the exchange, that we should be covering a portion of them as well, I don't know that that's what was being asked by the people in Prop 3. My belief is this. Prop 3 said, hey, you have people that don't have health care, and they should, and they need it. We need to help them. And absolutely for fact, and no one can contradict it, what that legislature will pass will cover those that didn't have it. But they have this other obligation called balancing the budget. There's other obligations and duties that our legislative branch has that were not really articulated in Prop 3 but still exist. You have to have a budget. You have to be able to balance it. And you have to have, because you heard what the people
years
said.
Years down the road.
Yeah, years down the road. You have to have those that the people said in Prop 3 to be covered, you have to cover them. And I don't think you would have that gap covered absent the vote. So I think the vote was critical. It's the people said, we want to see this coverage. The coverage is going to happen. Guarantee.
Holy smoke, Greg.
What?
Whatever he was talking about.
He's been chewing your gummies.
Let me just say, this is not nearly as complicated, and the Republicans have done such a good job of kind of blah, 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 blah on this issue since 2014. Simplify so that even I can understand it. Here's what happened. The federal government said, we're going to pick up a lot of mostly working poor people, and we're going to help them get insurance. And most states said, okay, great. State has to put 10% in, the feds put 90% in. Utah said, no, you know, really, we need a Utah way. We're different than other states. And pretty soon, all other states started recognizing, hey, this is working pretty good. And pretty soon, all of our surrounding states, including Idaho and Montana and Colorado and New Mexico and Nevada, they're all going, yeah, this is working. We got it. But not Utah. No siree. We got to have our own Utah plan, and we don't want to be part of that federal plan. So now they're so warped about this.
The federal government, though, is trillions and trillions of dollars in debt. Utah, though, doesn't have that problem.
Wait a minute.
So
no.
Are we doing something, right?
We raised taxes on January 1st, 2014 to pay for this. It all goes in a bucket, and then it comes out of that bucket for the federal payment on that. Utah is saying, we don't want our share of the bucket. We're still paying our taxes for that 90%.
And don't want to lose the money.
And so, let me just finish up, Greg, because I'm over talking, but that's okay. So now the people go and say, it's been 5 years, the legislature's blah, blah, blah. And so what the interesting political thing to watch is the people on the west side of Salt Lake and other places, the representatives, they're scrambling. Mr. I'm against this. The guy who's been singularly responsible for killing it is a guy named Jim Dunnigan. But 57% of his constituents said take it. Eelison and Sandy, 60%. Ivory, 53%. What I'm saying is Mike Winder, 58% of the people in West Valley that desperately need this health care, and they're Mike Winder and Craig Hall with 65% of his people voting for it. And they're standing up and pontificating, blah, blah, blah. Do what your people want, representatives. Okay. Or guess what? So, you're going to get beat next time.
So we need a little correction, though, before we move on. I believe Dunnigan, who sponsored the House version, I wasn't there that day, that he actually voted against the House version that he sponsored.
He did.
He did, but not for the reasons you think.
Okay,
so it wasn't tough enough.
Let me just tell you this. I'm at a national conference. It's a conference of state legislatures. This isn't Republicans and Democrats. It's everyone.
Humans.
Beings. They are state lawmakers.
Well, they're lawmakers.
They're lawmakers.
They're not human.
Okay, you're
I'm
not
a recovering
human.
Lawmaker, so I'm more human now. So here's the thing. The Speaker of the House of Massachusetts, we can agree that would be a more left of center state. If there's a makeup of the legislature in Massachusetts, it would be as heavily Democrat as Utah's Republican weighted legislature.
With a Republican
is here
governor.
In Utah. So he said that, and this is the case in all these states, Jim, that you just rattled off that apparently love this. Medicaid expense to the state is the fastest growing portion of their budget and is unsustainable. And what he's saying is make it a single payer, have the federal government pay it all, because it's eating away our budget at a rate we can't sustain. So when Jim says all these states are just cheering that they have this Medicaid expansion, the take-up rate of those that have enrolled has been more than estimated, but the cost of health care is going through the roof, of which every state is obligated to pay a percentage of, not a dollar amount. Now, I'm going to tell you that the only thing that we've ever asked is we have to budget to numbers. We don't print money in this state. It's the only thing we've ever said in terms of let us know that number, let us do actuarials, and we will fund it. Prop 3, they raise a tax, but you know what they do? They raised a set and capped amount. They didn't say, hey, no matter how expensive. Yeah, so they raised, so Prop 3 raised a sales tax. If they were intellectually honest about, hey, we're just going to pay it and it's not going to be that much, that sales tax should just ride with the cost, the state's cost, no matter how high it goes. But they knew if they did that, it probably wouldn't pass because the costs keep going like this. They've conveniently took the sales tax amount here.
In the middle.
And then they've capped it. They've capped their own tax while they say to the taxpayer and us, pay whatever that cost is going to be. It would come at a cost of something
else.
Look
at what but one quick retort. So look at the Republicans' response. You know what their response is? We don't like the 90-10 split. So we'll take not 150,000 poor working Utahns and give them health care. We're only going to cover 100,000. And we're going to go on a 70-30 split with the state paying 30%. Who would think of that? Cover less people and have the state pay more money is their solution.
It's inside baseball, but that's traditional Medicaid. It allows you to actually budget to a number, that 70-30. But we've asked for the waiver for the 90-10 for that same population. And so we're looking for the 90-10 for Medicaid expansion. But until we get that, the certainty is that you pay 30%, not the 10. But that allows you to know what number you're getting into when you start.
And the legislature promised us last year, whatever, no, we're sure, we got to grease. The Trump administration is there. They're going to be there for those waivers. They never came through. So the legislature may well be paying 30% instead of 10%.
But we've gotten
waivers. And high-fiving.
What if we don't get the waivers? This all looks like it's on track to probably pass the Utah legislature. What if the waivers don't come through? What do we fall back to?
So look, I'll tell you, they're working on a fallback plan, but I'll tell you just simply, we're going to cover the gap. If you don't have health care and you're at that 0 to 100%, you're going to be covered. And if it was the case that those waivers didn't come, there are special sessions that can be called. There's the session that would come. I will tell you this. I will promise you, very simply put, the people that do not have coverage that Prop 3 said and the voice of the people said, we want Medicaid coverage for, will have it. End of story. We can talk percentages or how you paid for it or who paid, but I'm going to tell you, bottom line, that legislature will make sure that those people that are uncovered are covered.
Okay, I'm going to shut up this time.
Okay, because I keep last time.
He always gets the last word. Every single segment you get the last word. It's not fair.
All right, Jim's out. Let's talk about cell phones for a second, because the Utah legislature looking right now at the possibility of just getting rid of cell phone use in cars. I think if you have a Bluetooth, you'd be able to keep it with this last bill that was up there, where you could call, but only if you had a Bluetooth, no other calling on your phone. Distracted driving is a problem. Is it something that we should be getting rid of altogether?
I'm against the ban. I think that distracted driving is an offense. It's a violation. You can be ticketed for it, and I think that it needs to be ticketed. I think that, I mean, we've all sat at a green light when the car in front of us doesn't go because they're on their phone.
Yeah.
So I will say that I think Bluetooth and technology is helping in terms of concentration on the road. I think it's too draconian and frankly too bossy to say we want no cell phones to be used in an automobile. I think it's over the top. Where people are distracted, they should be cited for it.
Okay, the same legislature that was phobic on 0.5% DUI, you know, which is two sips and your DUI. Safety is so important. You know what? It turns out distracted driving on the phone is about 7 times more distracting to driving and hazardous, not only to you, but to the other cars, than this 0.5% DUI. So I don't think either of them ought to be, you know, locking
up. Hey, book it. I'm with Jim on the 0.05. I oppose that bill. I think it's, you got a speedometer in your car and you have a speed limit on the road. It lets you know how fast your car is going so that you can stay in the speed limit. This 0.05, we don't have those. I mean, I think it's down to a level now that's very hard to discern. By gender, by weight, it ends up becoming very problematic. And if you get that DUI, it changes the trajectory of your life in terms of its consequences for insurance, for your family and their automobile, employment opportunities, things like that.
But security to make it clear, though, you won't get pulled over unless you're acting drunk, correct?
No. Well, you know what? If you go around with police officers, they oftentimes go to the places where people are drinking and they're there at closing time, and a lot of times they're just pulling people over. I mean, no, they're supposed to do it, but it's just the way the system works.
They won't pull people over without cause, but if you follow behind a car, there's oftentimes, even in the mid-noon day, you have committed a traffic violation. For instance, if you want to turn left on a road and you didn't stay in that inside lane,
they could pull you over.
That's a violation. And so if you stay behind a car, behind a car, you can find things. And I just think that it's a draconian law. People, they pointed to Ireland and other places in Europe. Well, they have neighborhood pubs in some of these places, they're pointing out, where we don't have things like that here in Utah. And so I didn't support the 0.05. And I just think that it could lead to more uninsured drivers because it becomes more expensive to get insurance if you are charged with a DUI at 0.05. And I worry about it. So I would agree with... I'm not even comfortable with my own skin saying this, but I agree with Jim DeBacchus.
All right, there you have it.
And I agree with Speaker Hughes.
Wow, that doesn't happen often. Two quick things before we wrap up. Oh, we're out of time. I'm sorry.
Next week?
Yeah, next week. Hopefully we were going to talk blackface. If there's any issues here in Utah where we're thinking there's legislators going to get in trouble, you can talk to your friends and see if it's going to come up here in Utah. And we want to talk about kids separated at the border. We could go on for hours. So
yes,
we'll talk about this next week. Thank you for listening to the second edition of Take Two's podcast. And we'll be back at it next week. So there will be more talking. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening.